Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them. Next week, we have coming up for you the sum up of Keys versus Honda, where the lawyer Hugh Scher has lost in the Supreme Court all the punitive damages awarded to Kevin Keys, lost even some of the severance awarded to Keys, but kept 15 months of severance for the abuse, you can't call it anything else, that Honda dished up to Kevin Keys, who had chronic fatigue and was fired. For now, this week, we're going to revisit our last interview, the review of the Supreme Court hearing before we knew the result. Next week, the result and our understanding of what this means for people with disabilities who seek punitive damages as a result of employment settlements. We do have for you, however, a new interview with Cutter Baloney and some new clippings for this week after the review of the Supreme Court discussion about Kevin Keys.
I saw your performance in front of the Supreme Court. Was it Cherniak was your opponent?
Yeah.
Well, he looked like someone who had his hands on a big contract and was going to handle it personally if it killed him, and it nearly did. Okay. That was good for your side.
I appreciate that.
For people who are listening for the first time, can we just briefly go over what it is you were faced with and what it is you're accomplishing here?
Well, I think there's probably a few fundamental points that are at issue here. The case, as you know, involves a wrongful dismissal of Kevin Keys, who experiences chronic fatigue syndrome. And the purpose of the dismissal was, in essence, to eliminate Honda's duty to accommodate him in work under Ontario human rights law.
Right.
So the impact of the case is significant for a few reasons. Number one, the Court of Appeal unanimously and the trial court have clearly stated that bad faith conduct by an employer who engages discriminatory tactics for the purpose of terminating a disabled employee in order to eliminate their human rights obligations is not something the courts are prepared to tolerate.
Right.
And in this case, the trial court addressed that, first of all, with an award of 2 years' notice, and then second of all, with an award of punitive damages in the amount of $500,000 and an award of costs in the amount of $610,000. So for a total judgment worth about $1.4 million, which is pretty unprecedented in a wrongful dismissal case. So certainly the message was a very strong one, and the Court of Appeal unanimously upheld in principle all of the findings in law of the trial judge. They just found that, taking a step back, that the amount was simply too high in terms of the punitive damages, and they reduced those damages. But they still upheld the fact that punitive damages were appropriate, that the conduct of the employer was discriminatory, was in bad faith, was inappropriate, and worthy of punishment.
Now,
that's a very significant message. Both parties, appealed for leave to the Supreme Court of Canada,
okay.
And both parties were granted leave for that purpose. Honda's purpose, of course, being to try to overturn everything that the courts had done below.
Right.
And our purpose being to uphold the principle of human rights primacy. In other words, that punitive damages could be based upon breaches of human rights law, and asking the court to restore the trial judge's rather significant award of punitive damages. And thirdly, and perhaps even more importantly from a legal perspective, the courts are being asked to really expand the jurisdiction of courts in dealing with claims of discrimination and harassment. Under the present system, if an employee is subject to discrimination and harassment at work, the only means available to address that kind of conduct is through a complaint to the Ontario Human Rights Commission and the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal. And a complaint to the commission is not a guarantee that, that the matter will even get to a tribunal.
Yeah.
Because the commission has such jurisdiction and discretion to decide, first of all, to not follow a complaint, to not proceed with one, to dismiss it for other technical reasons, or for that matter, just to say that this doesn't warrant a full board of inquiry. Plus the fact that the delays in that process are often so significant that it makes the process almost meaningless for the complainant. It's really not a very good process. So the Ontario legislature, first of all, has changed that process. Effective at the end of June of this year, human rights claims, if you will, for violations of the Human Rights Code in Ontario can be brought directly to the Human Rights Tribunal, and there isn't a need any longer to go through the Human Rights Commission process and the gatekeeping function, the sort of intake function that the commission has played for all these years has now been eliminated, so that those who have suffered discrimination and harassment can now proceed directly with a complaint before the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal, which is a very good advancement in the law from my perspective. I think it'll ensure that employers are held to account to a greater degree than they can be today under the present system, which frankly just gives them a free ride for years and years and years. So that's number one. The complainant will be assured of a hearing in a reasonable period of time. Number two, in the context of what the Supreme Court of Canada was asked to deal with in Keys and Honda, the courts were asked to, in essence, incorporate human rights protections under the code into all employment contracts across this country, so that the impact of that would be that where there's discrimination and harassment in an employment setting, particularly where that results in a wrongful dismissal situation, that the courts, in a claim brought before them, will now be able to deal with those issues of discrimination and harassment and to grant damages and compensation where those violations of human rights law are found to occur. Under the present system, the only body with jurisdiction to grant those kinds of damages and awards for harassment and discrimination is the Human Rights Tribunal. So this is a significant shift. It's one that's endorsed, of course, by the legislature in Ontario, who's made this change effective at the end of June of this year, but to allow that across the country would really be a means of modernizing human rights law in the context of employment law, by saying that where human rights violations occur in the context of the employment relationship, in other words, while at work, that the courts who are brought a wrongful dismissal action don't have to close their eyes to those violations, but rather will have express power to provide damages, compensation, and other remedies to address that kind of discrimination and harassment, something they can't do under the present law. I've been fighting for these things for the last 8 years, as you'll understand. Our claim was filed in May of 2000, and we've been asking the courts to do this for the last 8 years. The legislature finally saw fit to do so, 8 years later, and we're now at the point where the Supreme Court of Canada, which had previously made a decision 30 years ago that said that the courts could not consider these things because of the fact that human rights tribunals and commissions were in place to deal expressly with these issues. So what we're asking the court to do is to revisit its 30-year-old decision and say, look, in the context of modern human rights law, in the context of modern employment situations, the courts can't be in a position where their hands are tied behind their back, and claimants, people who are victims of discrimination and harassment, can't be told that the courts are without power to address the wrongs done to them. And the legislature has finally woken up to that reality. We're hopeful that the courts will do so. They've done so in the context of allowing courts to provide punitive damages, Right. Punitive damages are a rare and exceptional remedy.
Right.
They are there not to compensate victims of discrimination and harassment, but rather to punish perpetrators of that kind of conduct,
right.
Such as Honda in this case. You know, it's important that, you know, the courts be provided a mechanism, a tool, not only to punish perpetrators of discrimination and harassment, but equally importantly, to ensure that those victims of harassment and discrimination have available to them appropriate remedies, compensation, and just appropriate tools to redress the harms that are done to these individuals who are victims of discrimination and harassment. And that's what this court is being asked to do in the Supreme Court, and we're hopeful that they will do so in recognition, in part, of the fact that the Human Rights Code in Ontario is being amended to reflect that reality. It would be bad policy, in my view, to allow those kinds of changes to occur in Ontario, but then somehow to preclude courts across Canada and Manitoba and British Columbia and Alberta from not having the same kind of jurisdiction to do what courts in Ontario will now be allowed to do because of these amendments.
Okay.
Regardless of what the legislature is doing or has done in Ontario, as a matter of law, human rights protections are so fundamental to who we are and to the employment relationship that they should be implied into all employment contracts, both here in Ontario and across the country, so that employers who enter into these contracts of employment, basically employers and employee individuals, are going to be held to account where they violate human rights obligations, and that under the terms of a contract, express or implied, courts will be able to enforce against those employers discriminatory conduct and prohibitions against discrimination, and to provide damages for and awards for individuals who are the victims of that kind of discrimination perpetrated by employers and their management. So it's not simply that we're asking the court, Supreme Court of Canada, to follow the Ontario legislature's lead. Rather, we're telling them to look more fundamentally at what the nature of the employment contract involves, and to recognize as part of that that it's more than simply, you know, an obligation to provide reasonable notice on termination. Mm-hmm. It also includes, I submit, an obligation to hold employers accountable and to prohibit them from engaging in discrimination and harassment, and where they engage in that conduct, affording individuals, employees, a means to enforce those rights and obligations in a court of law under the terms of that contract.
Does this lead to implicit authority for each province's code, or even embedding a common law human rights code?
What it would do is it would take the statutory codes in place in each of the provinces,
right,
and effectively embed them into employment contracts.
Okay.
Employers are presently bound by human rights codes in the province in any event.
Yes.
And there's a code, and there's a process, a procedure under the code to deal with them through commissions, mm-hmm, and tribunals. What we're asking the Supreme Court of Canada to do is to make that principle apply across the country. Otherwise, what would be required is that each province and each territory in Canada would have to amend its own human rights code, much like the Ontario, mm-hmm, legislature has done, which, you know, it only took 10 to 15 years for the Ontario legislature to get there, to require citizens of this country to wait another 10 years in order to effectively give voice in the courts to the court's ability to provide damages and compensation for these most fundamental wrongs. You know, human rights law is considered fundamental law, quasi-constitutional law. To then somehow limit the ability of courts to give effect to that law and to provide, you know, awards of damages and redress where the law is broken and human rights of individual employees are violated, in my view, misses the mark and is a significant setback, because what it means is, in my view, it would result in the erosion of our existing common law and our existing human rights law by depriving courts of the ability to advance the common law related to employment in a manner consistent with human rights and Charter of Rights principles of equality and the right to be free from discrimination. So that's what we're asking the court to redress. We're hopeful that they'll bear that in mind, just as the legislature in Ontario has done, and hopefully will give effect to that obligation on employers across Canada. It's really an evolution of the common law so that we can apply the common law in a manner consistent with our Charter of Rights protections against equality, to ensure equality, and our Human Rights Code protections that provide for freedom from discrimination and harassment. What we're saying is that the common law shouldn't provide a lesser protection than our human rights laws do, and to interpret the common law without regard to the human rights and charter principles of equality effectively does that. It means that the common law is not effectively addressing human rights considerations in the way that it ought to, in the way that the Supreme Court has previously indicated it must develop. And what we're urging the court to do is to apply its own principles of advancing the common law in a manner consistent with our Charter of Rights and our Human Rights Code's protections of equality.
You've been listening to employment lawyer Hugh Scheer talk about nearing the end of his 8-year quest to have human rights law embedded in employment contracts across Canada. Briefly, we'll take a short break from the interview. Jay McShann, Vine Street Boogie. Thank you.
the slogan in the 60s was you meet the nicest people on a Honda. In this case, it's not necessarily true.
Well, it's a very unfortunate situation. It should never have happened the way that it did. And mm-hmm. the way that it's been dealt with, unfortunately, is very problematic. And we're hopeful the courts will, as they have throughout the last 8 years, recognize that, give effect to that, and to ensure that this kind of conduct will not be tolerated on the part of Honda or any other employer across Canada.
Yeah.
It was said, you know, that by Justice Sotinka once, that human rights protections are the last bastion of hope and the safeguard of individuals in a democratic society. Mm-hmm. So, in order to give effect to those most fundamental and basic principles and tenets of our law and justice system, it's important that all decision makers and all parties in the authority of making decisions that impact on these on human rights issues, that they have the ability and the authority to be governed by and to be directed in their conduct by human rights principles and codes that are established in our law. And what this court, what the Supreme Court of Canada did last year was to reinforce those principles. We're asking them to give effect to those same principles it just stated last year in the context of the employment relationship, and to ensure that courts are bound by the same basic principles that the court last year held that administrative tribunals would be bound by. So we're hopeful the court will be receiving of these kinds of arguments, and they will in fact give effect to them, so that individuals can be protected in the broadest and most accessible way in terms of their human rights, and can ensure that that it's acknowledged that human rights are not simply an act of charity or something we banter around as a matter of public discussion, that they are fundamental, quasi-constitutional, significant legal protections that serve as the basis for our democracy in Canada. And if they are not respected, if they are violated at whim, then we are all put in a position of peril, and we all lose as a society. So we're hopeful the court will give effect to those basic principles, recognize their fundamental importance, and ensure that courts have the tools in order to protect employees who may be the subjects of discrimination and harassment contrary to law.
Yeah, I think at some point, if we're lucky enough to live long enough, we're all going to be disadvantaged. And in addition to being compromised in principle by a breach of human rights, we're all going to be compromised in fact if we don't establish what you're talking about, because we're all going to get to the point where we don't have the muscle or the respect or the money, whatever it takes. And you probably need all of those things to enforce our human rights. At some point, we're going to be completely dependent on others, or substantially dependent on others. And if those rights aren't a fact by the time we each individually get there, we're all going to suffer them broken, in our own lives.
Well, I think the point you raise is a good one, and that is that we're all vulnerable in some way, and we're going to be more and more vulnerable over the time as we age, as we become older, as we become more ill, as we become more dependent on others. And so, yes, in that respect, to have these principles in place and to have effective tools at the disposal of courts and administrative bodies who are charged to enforce these principles is fundamentally important and necessary to protect each of us as we move forward. And so I have to agree with that principle.
Do you see the interest of the court in this case, which was obvious on the broadcast, but is implicit in their acceptance of the case for review, and the establishment of these new principles in the legislature? And Gaines, you spoke about last year regarding administrative tribunals, which I recall from the broadcast, but don't remain clear to me. Do you see these as emanating from the approach of the baby boom towards an age where the disabled, or are there other forces at work here that, for the time being, are more powerful?
That's a challenging question. I mean, we live in a very competitive environment right now economically.
Yeah.
We're living through, this recession in the country to the south of ours, and we're not far away from that. So that's a time when companies want to tighten their belts, want to constrain themselves, cut back, cut corners.
Right.
And it's in those instances where human rights protections are most important, because we are at that point vulnerable to the decision-making authorities of corporations, who employ many of us and who are in essence responsible for our well-being financially, as well as our ability to provide for ourselves and our families. And so in that context, certainly, there are a lot of forces at play, economic in particular, but and so it's even more important, I submit, to ensure that the system that protects against violations of our human rights is secure, that the means and the tools are there for courts and tribunals to respond to these kinds of violations where they occur in order to preserve their fundamental integrity and importance in society. Because if we lose that, if we lose that to the whim of competitiveness, if we lose it to the whim of economic forces, then we are really denigrating ourselves as a society.
Right.
And setting ourselves up for a very serious problem in months and years to come, because without that bedrock foundation of protections of our most fundamental and cherished values and principles and the obligations of society to each other to preserve these things, you know, why else do we have these institutions of society? Why do we have democracies? Why do we have, you know, economies if they're not there to serve us in a way that enhances our humanity and enhances our ability to be productive citizens? You know, what's the point of all this, one might ask? And so, you know, the point you raise is a good one. And that is, there are a lot of external factors, and they have to be kept in check. You know, there needs to be a balance struck between, you know, how the economics and the preservation of the most fundamental principles of our democracy can work together to ensure that, you know, that our society, through its economy, through its polity, through its economic systems, is serving, you know, the society as a whole, and not just serving, you know, multinational corporate interests that, frankly, have little or no regard to the health, well-being, and integrity of Canadian citizens. What's important to us is more than just the dollar above all else. You know, we have fundamental institutions in our society, be it universal health care, be it public education, be it, you know, protections on our market systems in terms of regulatory systems that ensure that our food is safe and healthy, and things of that sort. You know, we don't just allow, you know, the marketplace to run wild without any regulation. There are fundamental principles that are of fundamental importance to us as citizens and to society in order to preserve our basic well-being, our health, and our safety. And, you know, where economic forces are allowed to intercede and to, in essence, weaken those most fundamental principles and protections, we all lose. Because we lose what's of most fundamental importance to us as a society, as a group, and as individuals in our democracy. So in that context, you're right, there are external forces at play that can impact on these things. It's up to us as a society to understand the importance of these fundamental human rights, understand how they impact on each of us individually and as on society as a whole, and understand why it's important to preserve these protections as the basic bedrock of our ability to participate as meaningful citizens in Canada.
International criminologist Stuart Henry's published 23 books, and a few with Dragan Milovnik, and his view expressed succinctly in an interview that I did with him was that humanity is the ability to affect for the better your own environment and the environment of those about you, and that when you're deprived of that, a crime, in fact, has been committed.
That, no question, we all lose in the circumstance where we're not acting in that way and where our humanity is, in essence, diminished. So in that respect, I agree. We need to take steps to advance these principles, to preserve them, and to ensure that our society is respectful of them and advances those principles, because that is why we're here. You know, we're here to ensure that we all share in the bounty that this country offers, and that we are able to do so in a fair and equal, in a free way, And without those basic principles of freedom, of equality, and of of access, then many of us are going to be without basic protections, basic provisions, and basic abilities to participate in our society. So I agree. You know, it's important that we take these principles, that we maintain them as the bedrock of our democracy, and that in doing so, we look to thrive as a community and to develop, a growing and everlasting economy, a growing and an everlasting, ability for people to participate in society, to access society, and that we remove the most fundamental barriers to the participation of people in society, be they social, political, or economic barriers, and particularly where those impact on those most vulnerable, those with disabilities, those who are senior, and others. It's of fundamental importance for society to step in to ensure that those barriers do not impede the ability of our citizens to engage in society.
I asked maybe naively, I don't know, but I don't think any more naively than a lot of people who would be listening. I asked Dr. Henry, what is it that if it is a loss, as you say, for everybody, what does the person who is discriminating lose? And he came back very quickly with, they lose their humanity. They lose their connection to the rest of mankind because they distance themselves from it when they invest in diminishing others.
Yeah, I think there's truth to that. I mean, to a certain extent, we're all here as stewards of these most fundamental principles, these most fundamental values, and to the extent that we take actions that are contrary to those most basic principles, we dehumanize ourselves, we dehumanize the process, and we, in essence, put at risk those values and principles, which are what define us as human beings. So I agree. It's of fundamental importance that those issues be recognized, and that those who are engaged in perpetrating this kind of harmful conduct recognize that they are doing themselves a disservice, they're doing society a disservice, and it's not something that society should tolerate.
Basically, it's a lose-lose situation, but there has to be a mechanism behind it to bring that point home.
That's
where
right,
people
and
don't...
the tools to bring home those messages, and that's what we're asking the court, the Supreme Court of Canada, to recognize.
You don't expect a Supreme Court ruling for perhaps 5 or 6 more months, I take it?
That's about right, I would suspect.
Okay. And for someone who wanted to follow in the footsteps of a progressive ruling in this case, who encountered discrimination that they felt merited compensation and didn't want to follow the Human Rights Commission as an option for whatever reason, where would they start? What thread would they pick up?
Well, I mean, I think the sound place would be to get good professional advice. I would start by looking at the Keys, KEAYS, the Honda decision. It's in the internet. There's numerous references to it on the internet. For that matter, if there's serious particular questions that individuals have, I'd certainly be happy to talk with people.
Right.
About how the law applies to them, and they can get my information as well by doing a Google internet search on me. My name is Hugh, H-U-G-H, last name S-C-H-E-R, and of course I've been working in this area now for the last 13 or so years.
Okay.
And certainly there are other professionals as well that have some expertise to deal with these issues, and I would suggest that for those who are feeling aggrieved, that those who feel that they've truly been disadvantaged or taken advantage of, and in more than just a trivial way, there are mechanisms available. The Human Rights Commission does still provide an information and referral service. The Law Society does the same.
The Human Rights Commission will refer to lawyers?
It will, or it will take matters on itself, depending.
Okay.
But certainly they'll be able to provide some basic information. But certainly the Law Society's lawyer referral service is another mechanism whereby individuals can call in and get the names of lawyers and even get a 30-minute free consultation from a lawyer who deals in these issues. Now, you need to be careful even in that context, because some lawyers, just as any other profession, will know more about this than others.
Yeah.
So there are certain lawyers like myself who specialize in this kind of work.
And you would call it human.
If you hunt around, you're going to find who those people are pretty quickly through the internet. Now it's amazing the information age we live in.
Yeah.
It's not hard to find a lot of these things out.
And you would call what your interest is human rights law, would you?
Well, I do mostly human rights and employment law, so basically wrongful dismissal work, human rights work in particular. Those would be the areas. I also do a lot of work in long-term disability insurance litigation, people who have been denied LTD benefits by disability insurers through their workplace. Is another area where I found a lot of problematic situations. And so, 90% of my work is particularly working with people with disabilities and minority groups who have been discriminated against or harassed in employment and who are terminated in employment or who have had their benefits denied to them through disability insurers at work or alternatively through the Canada Pension Plan. So, I mean, that's what I do most of the time, and I'm happy to help those that I can. And likewise, though, there are, others who work in these areas, and there's certainly information sources that people can turn to.
All right. There's nothing to follow in the meantime while this is being considered by the Supreme Court. Their deliberations are closed.
They are, yeah.
And we have to await the outcome.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your time. I mean, not just this show, but all the shows that you've done with us, and perhaps you can sum up when the ruling comes down what in fact it means in plain language for people who are feeling that they haven't got an answer for their issues of discrimination.
I'd look forward to come back again and to talk about that, absolutely.
After that happens. All right. Well, okay, as usual. Disrespect is working late, and you're working late, too. I appreciate your time on the show tonight.
Thanks so much. Take care now.
Thanks, you.
You've been listening to employment lawyer Hugh Scher, who for 8 years has fought to have human rights law included implicitly in employment law across Canada. If you're a regular to the show, you might recognize Jay McShann and My Child. Now for the clipping file this week, I have some unusual items because they've been held back from weeks past. A study released in March, Sleep and the Heart. Lead researcher Michael Soule of the Peter Munk Cardiac Center at Toronto General Hospital released a study based on lab experiments involving hamsters, which indicates that chronic sleep disruptions can trigger heart disease and possibly harm other vital organs. Researchers found that when the hamster's circadian rhythm or internal biological clock got out of sync with external cues, such as the day-night cycle, the animals developed clear signs of heart disease. What's more, there was evidence of kidney damage, according to the study published in the American Journal of Physiology, Regulatory, Integrative, and Comparative Physiology. Other studies, Dr. Soule noted, have suggested the heart goes through a daily period of rest and restoration, which normally occurs at night. This process is tightly regulated by circadian rhythm. If the body's internal clock is constantly disrupted, such as through frequent changes in shift work schedules, the heart may not get the regenerative rest that it needs. Dr. Soule urged shift workers to consider these findings when scheduling their work. If possible, they should try to maintain a constant work schedule for 1 month or more at a time, allowing the body sufficient time to readjust its internal clock, he said. Canadian municipalities are appealing to the Conservative government to renew its $2 billion commitment to affordable housing. Federal support for affordable housing will run out by March 2009, putting in jeopardy much of the progress made in addressing the problem in recent years, Gord Steeves, president of the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, said. Steeves told a press conference the lack of sufficient federal action on affordable housing and homelessness magnifies the terrible uncertainty for Canadians whose shelters may depend on the continuation of these programs. Steeves and Richmond Hill Regional Councillor Brenda Hogg met with Monty Solberg, Canada's Minister of Human Resources and Social Development, to present the Federation's plan on affordable housing, which, among other things, calls for the end of chronic homelessness. Solberg said, "We're waiting for some studies, both of the Affordable Housing Initiative and the Residential Rehabilitation Assistance Program, and also we have a federal, provincial, territorial working group in place that's looking at the financial and fiscal state of the entire social housing stock in the country. We're still waiting for that information to come in before we make any decisions on where we go in the future." Researchers in Australia are testing a hypothesis by studying the brains of rats born to pregnant mothers deprived of vitamin D with alarming results. The vitamin D-deprived rodent brains had more cell proliferation, enlarged ventricles, and less of a protein necessary for nerve growth. What we see is that when you take vitamin D out of the brain in the rodent, you can break their brain, basically, said John McGrath, a professor at the Queensland Brain Institute at the University of Queensland in Brisbane. We can change the way their brain develops. Dr. McGrath says it's too early to say whether the rodent brain research applies to humans, but he adds that even if only a small fraction of the cases of schizophrenia could be averted by optimizing maternal nutrition, that is going to be a really important outcome. More information here on vitamin D as a cancer fighter, too. And in Monday Star, an Ottawa woman has had the bus pass for her ferret revoked. She has a spatial disorder, and she can't go out without having panic attacks. And so she spends a lot of her time inside, unless she has the company of her ferret. Patting the ferret for her takes the focus off the panic that's emerging, lets her direct her attention somewhere that's warm and reassuring. She got the pass late last fall from OC Transpo. This spring, OC Transpo revoked the pass. They wouldn't talk about it specifically, only to say that sometimes passes for working animals are issued in error. If you'd like us to call OC Transpo, we'd be happy to badger them for an answer as to why they want to keep this woman indoors. Email us, dialogue@inbox.com, D-I-A-L-O-G, dialogue@inbox.com, with your ideas for the show. We welcome them in the evolution of our calendar of upcoming shows. And now for our weekly discussion with Cowder Balloony, blind and in sanctuary in a church in Montreal for 936 days, awaiting approval of his immigration application to Canada.
Just today, it's my friend. She stopped by, then she left now. She brought a coffee,
and she took me outside from the porch.
Okay.
Balcony.
Yeah.
And yeah, she told me you have to stay and to take a little sun.
That's good. Yeah, vitamin D.
Yeah, then she told me because she knows I'm tired and she.
That's true.
Yeah.
Little sun is good.
Yeah, that's what she said. She said, you have to stay in the sun. I said, 20 minutes.
That's enough right there. That's your whole day's vitamin D.
Yeah, but believe me, Jeff, I feel my body, it came not normal.
Yeah.
Believe me, little sun, it affects me. You know what I mean? I feel like...
Yeah.
I feel like that's too much, you know, something new to, touch my body.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the outside's not very, very sunny day. It's it's a little cloud, and it's a little windy.
Oh, well.
But it's chilly, you know,
sun is coming your way. We have it today.
Yeah.
So, soon. And, 20 minutes gives you all the vitamin D that you basically need. It's not all the vitamin D that you can take. But it's all that you need is 20 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's...
And when the winter comes, I guess we have to take vitamin D supplements.
Good idea. I had before, but I quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a bottle for 30, maybe 30 piece.
Yeah.
But I finish it no more.
Well, in the wintertime, the vitamin D. In the summertime, if you get the sun, that's enough.
Believe me, Jeff, I'm not good. This summer, I stayed in just maybe two or three times in the sun because I hate everything now.
You hate everything?
Yeah, I feel like this is not fair.
Well, it makes you think of being out there, doesn't it?
Yeah. You see everybody outside. You see everybody laughing, you know, working, and you stay in the same place. And
We'll have to get you a set of earplugs for going outside.
Yeah, I hope my case is going to be over maybe another two months or something like that.
Well, you have the offer of a job, and you have sold some CDs. You're entering into a record deal. If this is all in your application, then it's a whole new ball game. Everything's new.
You know, I don't know if I told you before I was thinking to do folk music or country music.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking anymore. I think about that. You know, today I have a good idea. I think that's what I love to do a long time ago.
What's that that you love to do?
It's slam. You can say slam poetry, poem.
Yeah.
That's what I love to do.
Slam poetry?
Yeah. Slam?
Yeah.
Slam, poetry, yeah.
I go once a month to an open mic for slam poetry.
Yeah.
In Hamilton, and it's very entertaining. I enjoy it. I'm getting ready to make my first presentation this coming month in August, early in August. I think it's the 11th. I will probably get up and recite two or three poems myself.
Yeah.
Never done it. Yeah. I love hearing other people do it.
Yeah. I don't think I can do that easy because I'm good. I wrote a lot of poems, you know?
Okay.
I think I'm ready to do this.
Okay. Well, it seems to be gaining recognition, you know? It seems to be more and more appreciated form of entertainment and artistic presentation.
Yeah, but I want to do it with French language.
Very
because
good.
Because French language.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot slam person to do that, you know?
Okay.
It's not I'm thinking it's new here in Quebec.
Oh, good.
I don't know. Yeah, but with French language.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we go on the Sky Dragon, and of course they're all English, and there's three or four people come down from time to time from Toronto to recite as well. Yeah, they come once a month. The Hamilton people, I think they go every week, but once a month they come from Toronto, and they're all good.
I don't think I can do that.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, there's I don't know, if you can get somebody excited about it, there's performing fees.
I can perform it easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, performing very easy. I'm telling you.
I think you could.
Yeah, I think I can do that very easy because that's my poem.
Yeah.
My poem.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm talking.
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
Yeah.
It's not somebody else to give it to me. You know what I mean?
That's true.
My feeling.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm doing. You know, like when I talk, I know.
Yeah.
I know what I'm saying. I want how I feel sad, how I feel happy. And,
yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I can, like, I don't know how I can say in English, but I can explain myself.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say it in French, but I understand it.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's easy for me to perform in for slam music, like slam poem.
Yeah.
Or serious.
Yeah.
I hope to do this.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, hope to hear about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. We'll pop this in the mail tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll talk Monday.
Yes, we will.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And to take the show home, T-Bone Walker's Hype and Women Blues.
Chance. When I first met you, baby, you didn't have a lousy dime. When I first met you, baby, you didn't have a lousy dime. She was standing on a deuce of benders and she was hungry and almost blind. Trouble on your mind. Yes, a woman ain't nothing but trouble on your mind. You've got to keep moving, boys, or you'll be left behind.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews. Thank you.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near the internet. Disrespect is streamed live at http://cfmu.mcmaster.ca. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at Showtime, Thursdays at noon, 93.3 FM, CFMU, to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.